serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special episode marking 75 years since VJ Day, victory over Imperial Japan after Emperor Hirohito declared his intent to surrender to Allied forces. It would become official 19 days later aboard the USS Missouri, and that 75th anniversary will be marked September 2nd at Pearl Harbor. Put that on your calendar and plan on picking up the live stream that day. One little-known detail about what was happening 75 years ago this week is that there was actually a conspiracy among leading Japanese military minds to intercept the emperor and prevent him from surrendering. Ultimately, it was foiled because American B-29s were flying over Tokyo and a blackout was imposed. You may hear more about that in one of our upcoming episodes. American fighters and bombers were still flying missions on August 14, 1945, and preparations for the invasion of Japan were also moving forward. Dick Lyon, a Southern California native who had been an Olympic-caliber swimmer at Yale, would later become the first Navy SEAL to reach the rank of admiral. But the Navy SEALs did not exist 75 years ago. He was part of the Scouts and Raiders, one of the original frogmen, and a reconnaissance mission to a potential landing spot near a small Japanese village brought him a unique encounter, not to mention a set of keepsakes he treasured until his passing.
Off we went to Japan, and I did another recon on a beach in a little city on Honshu, the big island, actually a village, really. Same thing. Good beach. Having gone in, done the beach, and was ready to come out and be picked up by my LCVP, the Landgraft, and get back onto the APA. And I noticed that the little city, as you might expect, right at the end of the war, little village, looked deserted. I mean, really, nobody. And as I looked, I observed three men, elderly, I could tell, my face mask on top of my head by that point, and I'm looking, and they came right down to the edge of the water, and I'm in the water up to about my shoulders, and I looked at them, and they looked at me. The man in the middle said, "I can see what you have just completed doing, and I understand what is happening. It's easy to see that a small landing will take place, relatively small. And I presume that this is being done all over our homeland. I want you to know that we will cooperate in any way that we can to make this peaceful and help in any way that we can to be sure that there are no additional casualties of any kind. And would you please be sure to pass this word to your superiors so that they know that there will be no opposition whatsoever?" And, of course, I was just astounded that, wait a minute, all in perfect English, I thought. After a pause, I said, "I certainly will do that. And by the way, here in this little village," he kind of straightened up a little bit, and he said, "Well, I must let you know, I achieved my undergraduate baccalaureate degree from Harvard University." I couldn't let that one go, and then I just paused for literally 5 or 10 seconds, saying nothing, and I just looked at him, didn't say anything, and then I said, "Well, I have to tell you, I'm a Yalie, and we used to kick Harvard butt regularly on the football field." We both laughed, and as it turned out, he invited me to join, he and his wife, and I ran it by my boss, who said, "This is a golden opportunity for you. By all means, go in, have dinner with them, and enjoy." He said, "In whatever way, I think he kind of is the leader of what's left in this little place, and we need that cooperation." So I did that, and I went in armed with 2 cartons of Lucky Strike cigarettes. They were more than gold bars. They were, and he was just delighted to receive those. And after dinner, I got back to get my way back on the APA. And as I was leaving, he said, "I want you to have this." And he handed me a portfolio of 23 applique pictures, if you will, done by hand, appliqué, and then in the characters on the pictures, a story of how each of those persons became a samurai warrior.
I can't imagine how mind-boggling that was to have that conversation on the beach. And just so people understand, you made it sound very mundane, these recon missions. Yeah, there's a good gradient, it was a good beach. But tell us how you did it. You mentioned your face mask and all that. Tell us what kind of equipment you had. Were you by yourself? Is this in the middle of the night in a rubber boat? Or were you just free swimming? How did this work?
Well, definitely free swimming. I went in, I have a lead line with which I would take the soundings, and a slate on which I would record the soundings and an indication where there might have been any natural or man-made obstacles. My uniform was a pair of swim trunks and swim fins. Do you remember the Churchill swim fins? You may recall those. No. They were a different shape, and that's where ultimately the Navy's underwater demolition teams became known in the Navy as frogmen, because with those swim fins on, why, you're the closest thing to looking like a frog as you could get. That was pretty much a face mask. I never went in the water without my K-bar, which is a knife, which was I had strapped on my lead belt. That's pretty much the uniform.
Another one of those things that has changed just a bit over the years. That was the late Admiral Dick Lyon. After he retired from the Navy, he entered politics, and for 8 years they called him mayor of Oceanside, California. For Jerry Yellen, the last fighter pilot is a moniker he often heard. That was the title of one of his books, focusing on the mission he flew in his P-51 Mustang on August 14, 1945. When he returned from that mission, the war was over, but one of his best friends, his wingman, Phil Schlomberg, had been killed in action. Yellen spent his final years as an outspoken advocate for the Spirit of 45 campaign, hoping that every year at this time, American leaders of the future would be inspired through reminders of the spirit of unity and belief that prevailed in America 75 years ago.
My wish for the Spirit of 45 is to reach out to all the young people in America, to make our stories known of what made us the greatest generation. 16 million of us served, 10% of the population. But the other 90% were at war also. We had an identifiable enemy. Japan was our enemy. Germany declared war on America. We never declared war on Germany, but that made the war, Germany and Japan. And after it was over, the leaders of America rebuilt Japan and rebuilt Germany so that we have allies of those who were formerly enemy. In 1988, my youngest son, a fourth son, married the daughter of a kamikaze pilot in Japan. And I have three Japanese grandchildren. They mean as much to me as my three American grandchildren.
When your son had proposed to his wife, she had to talk to her father, because her father was a Japanese fighter pilot in World War II, right?
Yes, he was a kamikaze pilot. He had four or five hours in a zero. His whole class of classmates were sent into the war as kamikaze pilots, but he and one other guy were sent to China, and he survived the war. In 1983, I was asked by the Mitsui Bank Group to go to Japan, talk about real estate in America, and I didn't want to go in 1983. Japan was not a place I visit, and Japanese weren't human beings. They weren't people. But my wife wanted to go, so we went to Japan, and I immediately fell in love with the culture, the food, the people. So when we came back in 1983, we offered a homestay program to our youngest son, who was a senior in college. He graduated from college in 1984, didn't know what he wanted to do, so he took a job teaching English for 1 year. He hasn't come back yet. In 1987, we went to Japan, and I met a young lady, and Robert said that he wanted to get married to her. And I saw the faces of the 16 guys that were killed that I knew in my squadron. And I wondered what they would think. But it was not my life. It was his life that was important. And I asked him, what does her father say? And he said he won't meet me. 7 months later, the father did meet my son. The father asked him just 5 questions. How old is your father? 63. Was he in the war? Yes. What did he do? He's a pilot. What did he fly? He said P-51s. He said, where? Over Japan. And he went home, said to his wife, make the wedding. And she said, why? We hate them. And he said, any man that could fly a P-51 against the Japanese and live must be a brave man. And I want the blood of that man to flow through the veins of our grandchildren. So I have three grandchildren in Japan. I met, for the first time, a member of Phil Schlomberg's family. Phil Schlomberg was my wingman, who was killed on August 14th, 1945, on the last mission flown over World War II.
And you guys were P-51s, and he was a good friend of yours and was flying on your wing, but he had somewhat of a premonition about that mission, didn't he?
Phil Schlomberg, we were briefing on August 13th, and somebody asked, why are we going there? They dropped two bombs, the war's over. And Jim Tapp was our then CO, and he said, we have to keep them honest. And Schlomberg leaned over and he said, Captain, if we go, I'm not coming back. And I looked at him and said, what are you talking about? He says, it's a feeling I have. So I told Tapp that story, and he said the only person to get him off is Doc Lewis, if Schlomberg agrees to go see him. And he didn't want to see him. He says, I'll go. On the morning of the 14th, I said, just stick on my wing. They're going to broadcast the code word Ohio before we ever get to the target. Nobody heard the code word. We got to where we have to drop our exterior tanks. We dropped the tanks. We went in and strafed airfields around Tokyo. We were getting shot at, I know. You could see the tracers. But when somebody had only 90 gallons of gas left, we needed 90 gallons to get back to Iwo Jima. They called in 90 gallons. And I'm leading a flight of four, and leading my flight of four through some clouds towards the B-29 that's going to navigate us back to Iwo Jima. When I came out of the clouds, Schlomberger was gone. There was no radio contact, no visible contact. And he was the last guy killed in World War II. While we were strafing Japan, they declared the war over. And it was 3 hours before we got back. So he was really the last man killed on a mission of hostility towards the Japanese on August 14th, 1945. Phil Schlomberg graduated from university at the age of 16 and entered the Air Corps at the age of his 18th. And he took the IQ test, and his IQ test score was the highest ever scored of any of the 16 million of us that entered World War II. He was bright and brilliant and a good pilot. And he knew he was going to die, refused not to go, and went and was killed.
One of the more than 406,000 Americans who made the ultimate sacrifice in World War II, and not the only one to pay that price in the final days of the war. Mickey Gannich will turn 101 in a few months. His frequent speeches to Americans young and old often focus on December 7, 1941. The young sailor was in football pads aboard the USS Pennsylvania, preparing for a game against the team from the USS Arizona. That game, of course, never happened, and Gannich was fortunate to survive the attack on Pearl Harbor. His ship wasn't seriously damaged again the rest of the war until the final days, 75 years ago this week, off of Okinawa.
Something happened August 6th of 1945, it dropped atomic bomb on Hiroshima. 3 days later, August 9th, it dropped atomic bomb on Nagasaki. 3 days later, August 12th, we got in Okinawa. All the other ships are in there. We anchored in there. 8:30 that night, Japanese plane came on with its lights on. Nobody fired a shot at it. They thought it's a friendly plane. Aimed its torpedo at the coast of the big ship it saw. Battleship Pennsylvania. The living compartment, the quartermaster's, is back by the rudder, back by the propellers. That's where the living compartment was. Half hour before that, I went up the bridge. I was going to write a letter to one of my sisters. 8:30 at night, when that Japanese plane came in, launched that torpedo, it hit the propellers back there. Everything went in and up. The living compartment, the quartermaster's, I had 26 quartermasters. I lost 20 of them that night. The next morning, Japanese asked for peace. We're trying to stay afloat while we signed the peace treaty in Tokyo Bay. They told us in the shallow ground, so if we sink, we just sink in the mud. We was able to stay afloat. We got hit at Pearl Harbor and never got hit again until the night before Japanese asked for peace.
And if I'm understanding you correctly, had you not gone above to write the letter to your sister, you would have been in there where the torpedo hit.
Yeah. I forgot out of the plans for me there, too.
And in this case, those 20 men who were killed were guys had come to know very well.
I knew them. I knew them by their first names there. And being on the ship there and knew them by their first names, they worked for me, and I knew them. And one of my jobs is to identify bodies and parts of bodies here. I hope I never have to go through something like that again. Identify them by the clothing, the stencils on their clothing and names there, trying to identify them and collect their gear and send it home to their families. In fact, one of my first class, the one that was next one under me, I took his clothes back to his folks back in Wisconsin there. Mm. That was hard to do.
How should those guys be remembered all these years later?
By treating each other like they treated you. They were alive. We'd treat each other respectfully, lovingly, try to be friends with everybody. I think with them, that would be a plus if the people would know it.
You know, and I've talked to so many veterans for whom VJ Day was a day of celebration, and they were excited. Here, the war is finally over. But it sounds like for your ship, that must have been bittersweet considering what had just happened.
Yeah. It told us to Guam, which is the war's over. They already signed it. We're still sitting there. And it told us to Guam there. A peace treaty was being signed. We got in Guam, put us in a floating dry dock, and recovered as many we can of the bodies and all. And we got patched up and they sent us back to the States. The war is over. They sent us back to the States. We got about 300-400 miles east of Guam. Well, we had to, when the torpedo hit, it wiped out the propellers on the right side. One on the left side was good and one was not so good. About 300-400 miles east of Guam there, we started having problems with the propeller. So we stopped the ship. We were all by ourselves. The war is over there and everybody else went there. They're different directions there. We stopped the ship, put divers on the other side, see what they could do. Because in all big ships, you have divers. We put divers on the other side, see what they can do with that propeller. Meantime, sharks were attracted by parts of bodies that are still on the ship here. We pulled the divers out of the water, put boats in the water with the Marines here with rifles to keep the sharks away from the divers so they can work on the propeller. So we came back to the States by ourselves with one propeller out of four.
And if they hadn't been able to repair that one, what would have happened to you guys? You were dead in the water, huh?
We'd be out there like the Indianapolis, the one that took the atomic bomb there to Tinian for bombing over Japan there. We'd been in bad shape, but fortunes of the war, I guess, well, that's what you'd call it. And this was September 2nd, they signed a peace treaty in on the Missouri in Tokyo Bay. So it's quite a relief now we can get back to normal, if we can, and think about what happened there and think about the future, what's going to happen.
Here in 2020, the not-so-distant future, we'll see our military's top brass once again on the USS Missouri as they commemorate the 75th anniversary of the signing of the surrender aboard that mighty Mo. That'll happen in Pearl Harbor on September 2nd. The realities of the COVID-19 era will limit how many people can be there in person, but there will be a live stream of that ceremony, of a special Warbird flyover, and a few other events in the days leading up to it. So make a note of that. Head over to hometownheroesradio.com if you want to explore some more information on that. And join us again next time here on the radio when we're reminded again through the stories of our veterans that on VJ Day and every day, our freedom is not free.